government is, who the deep state is, past Barack Obama, John McCain, George Bush, and the neocons. Because we see this police state control grid, the spying apparatus on citizens just growing, expanding, decade after decade, year after year, now really coming to a climax, it seems, and what the deep state wants, where it's going, and ways to stop it. And so I'm very honored to have Peter Dale Scott on with us. Peter Dale Scott, why don't you tell the listeners your own bio, what you think is most important for listeners that don't know who you are, instead of me just picking and choosing what to talk about.
Well, first of all, I want to say I'm pleased and honored to be back on your show. And I guess what I want people to know most is that in the last 2 years, I've come out with not one but two new books, one called The Road to 9/11, and the other one, a vastly expanded reissue of my first book, The War Conspiracy. And rather than describe them at length, people can just Google for me, and at the very top they'll see Google for Peter Dale Scott. You'll see my website, which is www.peterdalescott.net, and I have a politics page on there that begins with description of these two books. So thank you for giving me a chance to work all that in.
Oh, absolutely. Let's get into currently what's happening, just a basic synopsis from your unique perspective, and whether you think the elite is in crisis or whether things are going well for them, and then who that deep state is, who the shadow government are, who controls it, where we're going, you know, what their goals are.
Well, because it is a deep state and a shadow government, I'm very much on the outside and just trying to put together clues. But I think that, in a sense, we've had one since World War II, and particularly the decision, you know, there was a kind of mood of panic right after World War II about the Russians, and I remember it. I didn't, as a Canadian, I didn't really participate in it, but I remember friends whom I respected who were sincere in their fear that if America didn't fight to dominate the world, then Russia would, the Soviet Union would take it over.
And then they built that tool to, quote, save us, and it inevitably turned into the Great Tyranny.
Well, what they did specifically, I mean, I'm trying to be hard-edged and narrow in my facts here. They created this special adjunct to they created the Central Intelligence Agency, for one thing. But then they went beyond that. At least the CIA was created by a statute, although the powers it now exercises were not envisaged in that statute. But when they went further and created something called OPC, the Office of Policy Coordination, such an innocent title, but in fact a very heavy agency whose function was defined as the subversion of other governments. Well, if you create an apparatus that's very skilled at subverting other governments, it's not at all surprising if you get some blowback and that one of the governments that's being subverted is our own. And what I refer to as the deep state is its origins are in that it was actually a huge apparatus at one point, larger than the CIA. And eventually was creating many, many problems for America.
Simply became continuity of government. I know I'm oversimplifying it, and now
you're jumping a bit, but yes, to shorten the whole narrative, you began...
Well, I don't want to shorten it. I mean, let's go back. I just wanted to jump ahead for a moment. But
no, that was a good thing you said that. In the 40s, it was OPC, and in our decade, it's COG. We've gone from one set of misleading initials to another, because continuity of government, as I always say, if you're planning for COG involves suspending the Constitution, well, then it's better to call it change of government than continuity of government.
And then we look at who's involved bringing narcotics in, who's involved staging terror attacks, who's involved paying off local police chiefs. Let's zoom in.
Can I pick up on what you just said, that one of the real elements of continuity through all of this is the fact that OPC got involved not just in dealing with drug traffickers, but actually in the Far East building up drug traffic as a kind of capitalist resource against communism in China and Southeast Asia.
And again, there's that very deeply evil idea of end justifies the means. Well, if the Soviets are making money running child kidnapping rings, we better. Well, if the Soviets are dealing cocaine and heroin, we better take control of it. You know, it's always, we're doing all this evil because we have to guard the truth with a bodyguard of lies.
Well, as I say, it began in a mood of fear, but it went on to a mood of global dominance. It changed. At the beginning, it was a question of fear that if we didn't control the flow of opium in Southeast Asia, then the Chinese communists would. Whether that was true or not, I actually doubt that it was, because, you know, opium had been such a scourge to China that one of the things that was really motivating the Chinese communists very powerfully was to end the scourge of opium.
That had been used by the Western powers to control, to get into China, to then break it up. And let's not forget Skull and Bones, which predominantly founded the CIA in 1947, was founded with opium money out of the Russell.
So far enough back, that's quite true.
So we all know it was never good. I mean, they sold the young men that went and joined and murdered and killed and did all this evil to fight communism. But up top, the big boys knew what it was really about.
Well, you know, it was an ugly situation in Asia. The communists were doing ugly things too, and as I say, rightly or wrongly, the decision was made. But because it was made in secret, it was never made with rational reassessment. Most policies of the government are ones which are reassessed from time to time, but the involvement with the drug traffickers was so secret that there was no overview, reassessment, and it turned Burma, which before the war had not been a major part of the global opium scene, it turned Burma into the major supplier of opium and heroin for the world. And then, ironically, as the Vietnam War scaled down and the Americans pulled out, one of the consequences was that the Burmese opium production also scaled down, and we might have actually been able to lick the heroin problem in the world, except that within a decade, there we were. The CIA was in Afghanistan and helping now to build up opium. Helping to build up is a bit strong, but backing the people who energetically built up opium and heroin production in...
Well, you got to have some way to put our young people in prisons and have cops in black uniforms stomping around searching everyone. I mean, you know.
It has become part of the social fabric of this country, and particularly, of course, it weighs very heavily on the ethnic populations, blacks and Hispanics. A very high percentage of young blacks are in prison for possession of, say, crack, which is treated far more punitively because it's an ethnic drug than regular cocaine, which is used by the upper middle class of the white population.
Well, I mean, Rush Limbaugh can take 100 Oxycontins a day that's synthetic heroin. That's all right. He doesn't get in trouble. But a young black man or anybody else is found with the cocaine, they're going to go to prison for a very, very long time. And you know, they need slaves in the prisons.
I'm very worried about this policy just from a national security point of view.
No, I am too, yeah.
You know, in this country, we have two kinds of Muslims. We have, ironically, some of the most affluent Muslims outside of the Islamic areas are in this country and are basically very well assimilated. But the prisons are recruiting grounds for the black Muslims, and there are different trends among them. Some of them, again, I think most of the black Muslims, their aspirations are to be middle class and to join the American mainstream, but there are some deviant elements recruiting in the prisons and actually getting people to go over to these training camps in Afghanistan. And I think that because all of our policies are so irrational, so crazy in this area, there's no irrational assessment of the danger that this, that I'm aware of the danger that this presents for our country.
Well, when we come back, I want to get more into drug trafficking with Peter Del Scott, but also deep government, continuity of government in and around the 9/11 attacks, and what you think the continuity of government system, our private owners, what are they planning for us in the future from the activities you're charting and what they're doing? I mean, I've never seen a buildup this big domestically. I mean, this is massive. It's industrial. It's focused on the average people. What are they planning? Peter Del Scott.
Jim Newcomer from Midas Resources, August 20th, 2008. Gold opened today at 8/11/10. 1 ounce gold coins can be purchased for $835.48, $411.75 for half ounce, and $205.88 for quarter ounce. That's $835.48, $411.75, and $205.88.
The Chinese government has begun a campaign of economic threats against the U.S., hinting liquidation of its vast holdings of U.S. treasuries, responding to Washington's trade sanctions, forcing the Yuan Revolution. Communist Party bodies are warning that Beijing may use its 1.33 trillion reserves as a political weapon, causing bond yields to spike, hammering the U.S. housing market, and throwing the economy into a recession. Russia, Switzerland, and several other countries